I promise I'm not doing this on purpose, but I wrote it in English again. So I guess next week it will come the same thing in Swedish. So Uncle Enya was telling them about when they fell down a hole in the snowstorm. The big round furry creatures were quite friendly, in a slow, slightly disaffected sort of way. Their thoughts seemed partly elsewhere, but they genuinely tried to make us feel at home, I think. That was my vivid feeling at the time, anyway. I was still completely sure I was dreaming, and I was oddly scared that I was actually freezing to death in some snowdrift as I dreamed of large teddy bear-like mole creatures giving us hot stew. It was that feeling where you feel you should be scared, but you can only manage to experience a vague worry. Have you experienced that in dreams? The stew they gave us was good. I think there were potatoes in it and fish, but mostly I just remember the wonderful feeling of hot nourishment pouring into my body. We scraped off our clothes, which stuck to our skin like skin, I guess. And the Gnirfta threw clothes on us of all shapes and sizes. I came out wearing a large woolen sweater with some holes and lots of shirts underneath and old rubber pants. And your mother came out with an old sailor's hat and two layers of summer skirts and double hoodies. We giggled. It was a strange dream. Mariam asked, "Do you remember any of this, Mom?" Their mother was quiet for a while, sipping her tea and staring into the fire. With time, she said, "It was very dark. I remember looking at the fire as if it was our only window into the world outside. This fire reminded me." She didn't look neither Mariam nor Davor in the eyes, but looked down into her tea. Davor and Mariam, for once, had nothing sharp in reply. There was something about their mother's demeanor that unsettled them. She was acting as if Uncle Enya's fireside tale were true, which seemed crazy. They looked at Uncle Enya. He smiled at them, then fixed his gaze once again beyond the fire. "Yes," he continued. "The dark. I had almost forgotten that feeling of tons of earth weighing down. Anyway, having fed us and clothed us as warmly dressed bums, they sit us down at a table, patting us absent-mindedly on the backs. Anyway, when you are in a dream, you can't go around thinking about that all the time. You have to get on with things. So I asked the old Gnirfta, 'Why is everybody so distracted? Are they always like that?' Imagine the dum-dummity of that. Here we were, the first humans in eons, probably since we met the Neanderthals, depending on how you feel about dolphins, to meet highly intelligent beings of a different race. We were all like, 'Why aren't they giving us more attention?' Though, anyway, the old Gnirfta was very serious when he answered me. 'Our princess is gone. I think I'll have to tell you a bit more about how the Gnirfta work and who we are.' That will be great," your mother said between spoonfuls of stew. The old Gnirfta nodded and smiled. "But before he starts, I'd like to point out that I am telling you about an uncle in northern Sweden telling his nephews about an old Gnirfta telling him and his sister a tale. Isn't that a convoluted mess of things?" What a great thing messes are. Anyway, the old Gnirfta, whose name was Gnorft, began his tale. "The Gnirfta," he said, "have lived in northern Norway since before the great ices came down over Scandinavia. In older times, they sometimes showed themselves to people, and the tales of trolls are really mostly tales of humans meeting mischievous Gnirfta, a slightly miscredited Gnirfta. But when humans started becoming more powerful, the elder of the Gnirfta decided to go underground, completely. Of course, the Gnirfta have always partly lived underground, but now we delve deep, as the dwarves say. Each Gnirfta responsible for 20 times 20 times 20 yards of caveness. The lazy of us just took up residence in Vadvichokka and claimed huge claims there as their contribution. I'm sorry, they claimed huge caves there as their contribution. There are huge caves in Vadvichokka. Instead, spending a century puffing on pipes as the more industrious of us built real caves. You see, every time someone went to Vadvichokka to complain and saw the huge caves completely lined with pillows, they were won over. We have a fondness for pillows, a weakness, you might even say. Old Gnirft went on. Anyway, we all live under the ground now, and we never make contact with humans. I'm sure you wonder how that is possible, but I can't explain that to you, or humans might start finding us. But, well, we are very old, and we remember things humans have forgotten and learned many times over. I could see your mother's eyelids drooping. I mean, it was tremendously exciting. But you try to stay awake as you're being told a story by firelight after a hot stew after coming in from the snow when it's 2 o'clock in the morning. The old Nirft went on. Well, how do we remember so many things, you might wonder? Well, you see, our minds are only part of a larger knowingness. When I know something, all my other Gnirf friends also kind of know it. And I know the thing better because I know what all the other Gnirfs know about the thing too. All of us except for one of us works this way. The princess. The princess knows nothing that we all know. But while the rest of us get pretty dumb when we leave the Gnirfta, she is just the same outside as here. For good real, so she is very important. In every generation, someone has to be princess. And if you are chosen, you have to do it. Just to make sure that the hive mind doesn't do really stupid stuff just because we're all thinking together. The current princess is called George, and here I had to slow him down. Okay. Stop there, I said. At least 3 questions on that. I puffed Gona awake. She jerked up her head, but it soon drooped downwards again. Firstly, how does this hive mind work? I mean, do you put wires in your brains to connect them or what? I mean, I wasn't seeing any wires, Uncle Enya said. Secondly, you've been around for eons and you're still running things using monarchy? Third, George is a boy's name. Gnorf smiled broadly, showing lots of disconcertingly large teeth, and answered, firstly, I could try to explain it to you, but you'll be really confused, so I'll just call it magic. Magic! Secondly, whatever, we tried lots of stuff, and monarchy works okay because the princess doesn't usually decide stuff unless we go totally out of control. Like that time when we all started to think that all of existence was a dream in the mind of some great being, but since we thought all beings were God, it might as well be the hedgehog next door, and we gave him sleeping potions and carefully took care of him so he wouldn't wake up. And we did that for years. And thirdly, we know, we tried to tell her, but she wants to be called George. Now Gona was almost asleep, but one thing bothered her. Hey, she said, it's not true you avoid humans. What about us? Gnorf nodded sagely. Yes, he said, times are changing. We believe in the interconnectedness of all things. Because our princess is gone and you came, you must be connected to the princess. So you must use that connection to bring her back. Us? We both asked simultaneously. Your mother was suddenly very awake. Shouldn't you ask us first? Gona exclaimed, gesticulating wildly at me and her, the us. I nodded emphatically. But you will do it, Yuzi, Gnolf said, stroking his longish nose. It's the interconnectedness of all things. You will see, and don't worry. We will send 2 Gnirft with you, so fair is fair. It wasn't stranger than anything else that evening, but it was more personal, so we looked at him accusingly. They will think we're dead or something at the camp. Oh, don't worry, we'll send lookalikes. The princess needs you. Lookalikes? The elder scratched his head. Yes, don't worry. It will all work out. Anyway, you do need to sleep. And with that, he took us to a small, dark room filled with pillows. And whether we dreamed or not, I can tell you that if it was a dream, we slept in that dream very, very soundly, very, very soon. As I was falling asleep, I heard Gnorf mutter. I remember it very clearly. We must have the princess back. I remember that hedgehog episode as if it was yesterday. Now, a nighttime story should optimally end in the nighttime. But things get so strange when you tell of a dream within a memory. We awoke not in that pillow-filled room of which we'd both dreamed, but on a bed of blueberries. Under a cliff. As we bewildered sat up, blinking in that pale northern summer light, and with blue dotted backs, we were back in our old clothes. The sun stood as high in the sky as it gets in northern Norway. The last remnants of snow were almost visibly melting away because even in northern Norway, snow doesn't stay on the ground in June. The two rocks laying beside us stood up. They turned out to be fur-covered, pear-shaped, mole-nosed, beaded-eyed, and very Gnirfta-like. "Good morning," they said. "I'll be a monkey's uncle," Gona said. "And then, good morning, because your mother is well brought up." The two Gnirfts presented themselves as Omid and Gomid, and they kept doing things in tandem. When one waved left, the other did the wave back the other way. It was very strange. They put their hands on their hips, which meant Omid put his right hand on his hip and Gomid put his left hand on his hip. And Gomid said, "We think the princess went north, and right now we are much smarter than you are, so we should start looking that way." "That seems kind of conceited," I objected. They shook their heads in that strange synchronized way, one doing the right word shake and the other the left word shake. And Omid said, "It's true, it's just true, but," he said, and he almost seemed worried that he says this, "that will change." "Who says we'll come with you on this weird adventure?" I asked. "Maybe George doesn't want to be found." Gomid said, "We have breakfast. We'll share it with you if you come with us." I was still quite skeptical, but Gona said, "Breakfast!" And so it was decided. We wandered off through the forest northwards, munching on, I must admit, very tasty deep-fried bread things. "Well," Uncle Enya said, "this isn't a story I can finish tonight, it seems. Tomorrow is another day. Good night to us all." It was dark outside in the hut in the forest, as usual, and the fire had died down to embers. Uncle Enya and Mariam and Davor and their mother and father heard the wind whistling and almost howling outside. Inside, it was soon even more quiet, apart from crackles from the fire and the deep breaths of bodies sleeping, and a snore or four.